The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in this Washington Times Community column, Forbidden Siegel Talk.
It's time now for The Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but when you listen to this program week after week, you notice that we discuss religion and politics. We always call them the two forbidden dinner table conversations. There's always somebody that says, can we not talk about that at the dinner table? Well, we talk about both. But some of you, particularly those who are getting to know God better or want to maybe learn about God in the first place, you may like the religious part of the show more. And that appeals to you more than the political part. Well, 2 weeks ago, I brought on my co-host Mike Friedenberg, and together we did a program showing how involvement with the society around us is just as important for Christians, that there are some issues we need to speak up about. Then last week, I brought in my other co-host, the lovely and talented, always lovely, always talented, Dana Wright. Now, if you hate politics, Dana is a kindred spirit. You discovered that if you heard her last week. Let me tell you that if you didn't hear us last week. She's a kindred spirit with you because she hates politics too. Now, actually, this is going to surprise them. I hate them too. And you're going, oh, yeah, Bob, sure. Now I'll tell one. Okay, well, yes, I talk about politics a lot, but that's because I think it's important to talk about them, not because I like politics. Believe me, there's times I'd rather be doing a million other things. But I do think it's important to be informed. And Dana, too, at least gradually, she's reaching a point where she has been educating herself. She's done it a lot these past few years, so much so that she told us last week that even though she voted for Obama in 2008, she will not vote for him again in 2012. Dana, welcome back to our program. It's good to have you here. And is Dana's mic on? I didn't hear. Okay. I didn't
hear. Am I on?
Now you're on. Right. Did you guys not hear that first thank you?
Thank you.
She said thank you, and I don't think anyone heard that. I heard her across the room, but I wasn't hearing it over my earphone.
So I'm here.
So I was guessing the audience did not hear. Okay. She's here now. Well, let's see. It was fun for me last week. Not as much fun for you.
The most fun
was the last 10 minutes talking you into coming back for a part two.
And, I can't believe I'm sitting here again.
Yes.
But here I am.
Hey, how about a part three, Dana?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll do part three and we'll see how it goes.
You're lucky I'm here right now.
No, that's probably true.
Before I do a recap of the show from last week, I just want to say that I was challenged by a very dear friend today to name him on the air. Fred Falduti, a wonderful man, a great realtor, and a wonderful Christian man. So, Fred, there it is. I met your challenge. So, if you're listening, text me. Anyway,
that is quite a name, Fred Falduti.
Isn't that
awesome? That name just cries out to have a show of its own.
We need
to
have the Fred. He is a showman.
The Fred, well, and he's a great singer. We did play a song of his, I think, a year ago on their show.
Yeah.
But, yeah, doesn't that just cry out? It's Fred Falduti of the Fred Falduti. It's just how did the major networks miss that one? I mean,
I don't know.
Most people will invent a stage name like that. This was his actual given name.
Okay. Yes, it is. A great man. So back to the political part. Last week, as I shared, politics are definitely not my favorite thing. In fact, I often went out of my way to avoid them. I felt that they were very negative and never made me feel good. Certainly, I didn't like hearing how people were treating each other. Certainly, the throwing accusations back and forth. It's just a lot about politics that is not something I enjoy. But I have discovered in the last few years that by not being involved and leaving things to chance, so to speak, or to the politicians, that a lot has happened in our country that I wasn't aware was happening. It's not obvious, and it's a subtle shift. So unless you're really involved in politics, you don't realize those things
are
going
on. Or if you're unemployed, it's obvious.
Yes,
but that's true. Not
but
everybody's unemployed.
But they may not know why.
And they may not know why.
Yeah,
that's true.
You just know you don't have a job.
That's a very good point.
You don't know why.
That's a very good point.
So last week, that's what we were talking about. And we covered several questions that I posed to Bob. Things like, what evidence was there in the past election that Obama won that would not have been helpful for Obama? That how come we didn't know that? Why wasn't it general information? Part of that question was, how could the whole country have been fooled in general with that and have elected this man? And then third, where can you go to get honest information? And so we talked last week about watching channels like Fox News, where they present more of both sides of the issue, certainly more of the conservative side, where many of the major networks won't even touch that side at all. Researching on the internet, reading articles, but also doing your own fact-checking. When you read those things, check those facts, look up the statements for yourself and verify. Using the Tea Parties for information is another great source, and I shared last week that I've attended several of them at different places, and so I know, at least from my own experience, they're very informative. I learned a lot, met many candidates, and they're very different from how the media portrays them. Found them a very positive experience. And then also I just wanted to say, like, there are many wonderful people that are sharing information on, like, Fox News. Mike Huckabee is one for me that it's very easy for me to listen to him. He's very congenial. He's
an amiable person.
Yes, and that makes it safe for me to listen and to understand and consider the things he's saying. So those are the things we covered in the last week, just talking about that. But today what we're going to cover is a bit of a review and an update on how come so much condemning information was not publicized in the first election. And actually, for now as well. I mean, it's still not really coming out unless you're watching certain stations. The general news still isn't sharing that. The second one is, how do you talk to people like me? How do you talk to somebody who's not politically minded?
Well, one thing I do is I make sure your mic is turned on. That's how I talk. It's still on. But
okay,
I think that got us off to a good start, because that's probably foundational for talking to you right now, at least.
Absolutely. So how do you talk to somebody like me? Because there had been many years that I had been shut down, not interested in listening to political conversations for some very subtle reasons, which I think people who are politically minded might be surprised by. So I'm going to reveal how talking to me would have been helpful. And then our third...
Okay, those of you into politics, Dana's going to help you to do your job better.
Yes.
So that instead of turning off your friends, your friends might actually listen to what you have to say.
Correct. That's what we will attempt to do. Finally, we will attempt to talk about what the future of America will look like after this next election, especially if Obama is reelected. So those will be the things we cover today. But I know, Bob, you had some disclaimers from the show last week that you wanted to cover.
Yeah. And I try to have a certain measure of integrity with this radio show. So while we're on the subject of fact checking, I had made it very clear last week to the audience that the things I was going over regarding Obama are things I had done my homework on, and that this is something everybody can do their homework on. But in my case, I do research. But after the show, when I played it back, and sometimes playing it back, you're going, boy, did I say that? I realized that there's something I should have been more clear about. The sources, the direct quotes, the actual words of politicians, they are found in my Washington Times Communities column called Forbidden Table Talk. And there's some other columns for some other magazines I've written too. But it's mostly Washington Times Communities. And that's where I have the quotations and the actual words. And if there was something Obama said or something Debbie Wasserman Schultz said, it's printed. You see what their exact words were. You see exactly where they said it, what news source reported it. Now, there have been times where on the radio I've read those quotes out loud, or more importantly, there have been times on the radio where we just played the audio clip of it, and that's just great. So sometimes we play audio clips on the radio, but we didn't do that last week. Instead, last week, I was recollecting. And since we were going through such a list, and I remember, Dane, I mentioned last week that any one of the 8 or 10 things on that list could have been a show of its own. But there were a lot of things on the list, so I was hitting things pretty quickly. And sometimes while thinking about something I researched and published a year ago or 6 months ago or maybe even just a few weeks ago, I'm describing events over the air in a more paraphrased fashion. The point I'm making is documented, but I'm relying upon my memory if I don't have the story in front of me, even if it's a story that I wrote and documented myself. For example, last week I mentioned Bill Ayers, the unrepentant terrorist who has worked with Obama. All true, but there was an important detail about that. I also mentioned last week that he tried to blow up a government building. And what happened was, due to the way he was arrested and the way the policeman botched up the case had to get dropped, but the man admitted that he did it. So this isn't somebody who's claiming he never did. Okay, that was all true, but I started supplying some of the details. And I said over the air that I thought it was the Capitol building that he and his colleagues tried to blow up. And I said I thought it was the early 70s, if not the early 70s, at least the late 60s. I was kind of, you know, pigeonholing it a little bit. Okay, well, as soon as the show was over, of course, I punched up the article that I'd written about him. And yes, it was the Capitol building that he tried to blow up. And yes, it was the early 70s. So I'm going to sound like I'm nitpicking here, but I want to be real honest. Last week, I said for a moment, I think. Now, normally that's not bad to say that, but on a show where we were talking so much about the getting details, the actual facts, right. I think I owe it to the audience to come back this week with more than an I think. I was making such a big deal about getting everything right. So I owe it to you to now say it with certainty. I do not think. I know. It is an established fact. Bill Ayers tried to blow up the Capitol, and it was the early 70s, 1971 to be exact, and also the Pentagon in 1972. Failed attempts, but they tried it. Now, here's another one. Also last week, I referred to an interview that Bill O'Reilly did way back in 2008 with candidate Obama. And a couple of months ago or so, see, I'm doing it again, a couple of months ago or so, but anyway, not too long ago, I wrote an article for the Washington Times about this. And I said in the article that O'Reilly had asked Obama, and then last week I was referring to this event over the air, but I was recalling information that I had researched for my article. But again, I didn't have my article in front of me because we were talking about so many things. And I said that O'Reilly asked then candidate Obama in 2008 if Reverend Wright, his pastor for 20 years, who said so many hateful things about America, if he taught his congregation to hate all white people. Okay, that's what I said last week. When I went back and read the article afterwards, listening to the show, I had it close, but not exactly right. And I'll tell you what the correction is when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life, but Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170, 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel co-hosting the program with me this week, as she did last week. Dana Wright continuing our discussion about politics for those who hate politics, particularly with this election coming up. Well, Dana, before the break, I was mentioning that last week I referred to an interview of Bill O'Reilly that he did in 2008 with candidate Obama. I said O'Reilly asked Obama if Reverend Wright had taught his congregation to hate all white people. And actually, when I reread the research I had done for my story in Washington Times Communities, and in that story, I had the entire conversation quoted. What O'Reilly actually asked was if Reverend Wright taught that all white people were bad. Now, again, it might just sound like I'm slicing and dicing here, because it's true that people tend to hate those whom they think are bad. And there have been many hateful comments about America, which do come out of the mouth of Reverend Wright. But still, there's a difference between saying someone is bad and saying someone should be hated. But you see, that's my point. When there's a little bit of a difference between me doing a vague recollection of something I researched, but I want the audience to know that if you go to the articles themselves, when I talk about these things and I tell you that I did the research for the articles, in the articles you're going to see the exact quotes. I can't promise you that I'll always, in paraphrasing it, remember it exactly. But since I at least caught a couple of times where I did it last week, I wanted to come back to you with full humility.
Especially because we're trying to be precise.
We're telling people to be precise. We're telling them to do the homework. So right. I don't want to be hypocritical. I said something last week where I got it right, but I was saying I think. And then there was another one where I kind of got it wrong, but it was the same idea. Now, I'll tell you why I mentioned that, though. It was important. Obama denied that Reverend Wright said that all white people are bad, and he claimed that Reverend Wright said that all racists are bad. And this was the main point I was making last week, which, of course, the main point is absolutely true. The black liberation theology, the kind that Reverend Wright understood and believed and was taught, teaches that all white people are racist and only white people are racist, and people of color are never racist. So if all racists are bad and all whites are racist and nobody but whites are racist, then all whites are bad. So the point was Obama was being very slippery because he was claiming he never heard Reverend Wright teach this stuff. And then he stopped and he goes, oh, well, I never heard him say all white people were bad, but I did hear him say all racists were bad, because he knows the day may come where somebody has a camera in their cell phone. Of course, the point I was making, the more important point about Bill Ayers is that Obama launched his campaign, his original campaign, when he first entered politics, in the living room of Bill Ayers. And we have to wonder why somebody who hates America so much that they wanted to blow up our Capitol building in the Pentagon thought Obama was a candidate that he could get behind.
Well, and that's where I want to jump in and ask, because that to me is the intriguing part about this whole thing. Now that you've clarified those things, how is it possible that kind of information was not just spread across the country? Because usually when you see candidates, they're just going into all the old closets and they find every single thing about the person. Even good things are a problem, and they almost can't turn around without some report. How is it possible that there was this really important information?
Okay, well, you're asking an excellent question, and there is an answer. Part of the answer is that information was spread across the country, but only by certain dimensions of the media. Now, last week we talked about the difference between the new media and old media. New media, social journalism, the bloggers, the online people, talk radio, to some degree Fox News. Yes, they tilt to the right, but they show both sides more than NBC, ABC, CNN does. Those tilt 180 degrees to the left. And the mainstream media, the major, what used to be the major television networks, PBS, NPR, they were the ones that didn't want to talk about this stuff. But when the
Why would they not want to talk about it?
Okay. Well, first of all, even if you get beyond Obama, most of the people in the mainstream media tend to be liberal. Now, some of them won't call themselves that. They'll say, we're not liberal. We're not left. We're just a good old fashioned common sense moderate opinion that any thinking person ought to have. But there's so much, for want of a better word, arrogance in that. Here's what people need to understand. Everybody keeps talking about the extreme right. Well, the definition of what is extreme right keeps changing, because the people who call themselves moderates are usually not staying in the middle. Moderate sounds like somebody that's staying in the middle. But these journalists are moving more and more and more to the left. The people on the right are actually staying in the same place. For example, 20 years ago, if we were talking about same-sex marriage, and I was talking to a liberal friend, he and I might have a disagreement about same-sex marriage. He might say that he thinks same-sex marriage is fine. I might say I disagree with it. And he might say, ah, Bob, you're a little behind the times. But he wouldn't accuse me of hate. And he wouldn't tell me that I hate all gay people. But now it's, oh my gosh, you believe marriage is for a man and a woman? Look how extreme. Well, 20 years ago, they might have disagreed, but they wouldn't have necessarily viewed that as extreme. What's happening is people are moving extremely to the left. So those of us that are actually staying more to the center, and I think I'm actually somebody more in the center, actually, I look like I'm on the extreme right because people keep moving more and more and more to the left. Well, the more you move to the left, the more somebody looks to the right when you turn the other way, even if they stay where they are. So the mainstream media, Dana, is more to the left, which means that if there are viewpoints they don't agree with or they have a candidate they like and something bad is found about them, they're going to be inclined to not want to report it. Now, I know that flies in the face of everything we've ever heard about journalism because they're supposed to have integrity.
That's hard for me to believe.
And we're used to, well, Walter Cronkite saying, that's the way it is. And we think that's the way it is. But that's not always the way it is. And like I said last week, there's the old proverb that says the first person to present his case seems right till a second comes forward and questions him. Now, this stuff about Bill Ayers came out. Sean Hannity was making a big deal out of it. At first, the other networks were ignoring it. Then some of them finally picked it up. But even when they picked it up, you'd hear things like, well, the American people are more interested in the issues. They don't want to hear about stuff. Well, I'm sorry, that is an issue. If there's somebody, I don't mean a repentant terrorist. If Bill Ayers said, yes, I did terrorism 30 years ago. I'm sorry. I wish I hadn't done it. That's different. But he's an unapologetic, unashamed terrorist who brags about what he did, and he likes Obama. Isn't that interesting? Why? And then Obama wasn't being truthful when he was asked about it. He says, oh, well, he and I served on a committee and we were in the same neighborhood, but there wasn't much of a connection. No, Mr. President, if you launched your campaign in the man's living room, there's some kind of a connection. You know, I'm not claiming you were friends for life, but there's some kind of connection. They're more than what you were letting on. So anyway, did I answer your question? The people that like Obama, they were motivated to not want to dwell on that. I also think that in Obama's case, this was historical. This was going to be the first African-American president. And I know a lot of people, I even know some people that are conservatives. I have a pastor friend, and I was very surprised after the election. He mentioned to me, oh, I voted for Obama. He seemed very proud of himself. I won't mention the guy's name because I wanted us to have a black president. And I said to him, do you know anything about the man's policies? Or is that the only reason you voted for him? He said, that's the reason I voted for him. And I started telling him about some of the things Obama had done and stood for, things we knew about him before he even ran. Like I mentioned last week, a vote for infanticide by voting against the Illinois Infant Protection. This guy knew nothing about that. Flew in the face of everything he believed as a Christian and a pastor, but he was proud of himself. And I think some people are proud of themselves. They voted for an African American, and then they get a haughty attitude. And if you didn't vote for an African American, you must be a racist. And they're going to stand by that, and they don't want to hear anything negative. But anyway, we'll talk more when we return. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric. Welcome back to our program. This is Bob Siegel and Dana Wright.
We're going to go on to how do you talk to somebody like me who isn't inclined to follow politics, doesn't really want to, but over time realizing I needed to know more. But I think there's still a lot of people that just prefer to ignore it. And as I've learned more, I'm realizing that people who are ignoring it probably don't even realize that they need to know more. And they're by not being involved, things are happening that are really changing the face of our country. So I thought it would be good for us to talk about how would you talk to somebody like me who didn't really want to talk about politics. So the first thing I would say is that remembering that oftentimes when somebody's passionate about a topic can look like aggression or appear to be inflammatory to somebody who's not familiar with it. So I understand the passion, but that passion can be offensive sometimes and can be intimidating sometimes. Another thing that really helped me a lot was having multiple conversations that were calm and kind over a period of time to exchange information. And I know you and I had many conversations about these things over a long period of time. It was not, it really took me a long time to get enough of the answers that I needed to really be able to process the information and be able to watch for myself and see more of the things. And I certainly have a lot more to learn, but I do see more now and I understand more. But Bob, you were certainly very patient with me as I kept feeling disbelieving about a lot of things, saying, how in the world can this be true? So realize it's not a quick turnaround. People like me, it takes a lot of time and conversations that just review information and help me understand. I know another thing that really kept me from wanting to learn more about politics would be sweeping comments people who are more politically minded would make. And they'd say things, and I know they didn't even realize what they were saying, but they'd say things like, you know, any person with a half a brain would see Obama is doing blah, 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 blah. Well, as soon as they've said something like that in a party setting or a conversation, I'm done with that conversation because obviously I only have half a brain if I didn't see what was going on and I hadn't a clue what they were talking about. So being really careful that people that are more politically, you know, they're more knowledgeable, be careful how you say that and don't lump everybody who isn't in the know into that group because it makes us feel stupid. We don't like that. Another thing would be remember that someone who doesn't understand politics well can often feel like the information is outrageous or just like some of the things you were just sharing with me. It just, that seems impossible. So making sure that, again, those repetitive conversations so that you can really become familiar with the information. And then finally, taking a lot of time to answer those questions to move somebody to a different place. It doesn't happen in one conversation to change somebody's mind about something. I know one of the things that is an example that isn't necessarily a political thing is all the hype that happened around Y2K. Tons of, oh my gosh, everything's going to crash. Save your computer, save your life. It's going to be huge. And absolutely nothing happened. But the hype around that desensitized people. And then, you know, when those things happen over and over in politics, you get desensitized.
Yeah. Well, it is human nature to exaggerate things. And of course, we do have all kinds of conspiracy theories out there. Y2K was kind of...
I use that as a neutral example hype.
It's a good example. It was halfway between a conspiracy theory and halfway the truth. It is true that computers were originally made doing things in double digits and when the year was going to turn, it was going to confuse some computers. And actually, a little of that happened. There were some gas pumps that stopped working. I went to a gas station that didn't work because it was computerized on that day. But, you know, our naval bases didn't close down and the Russians didn't come over and attack us. And I was one of those people and I had some pastor friends. And these are different pastor friends than the other guy mentioned, who were getting all freaked out about Y2K. And I, just so you know, as somebody who has warned a lot of times over the air about our current administration, I was not one of those ones out there crying about Y2K. I didn't think, Jack, anything would happen. I still made sure. I mean, I thought, well, I'll keep a little extra food in my house. I should probably be home on New Year's Eve. I figured better to be safe than sorry, but I wasn't out there, you know, crying about this thing. And when not, again, a little bit happened, but when the big disaster everybody thought was going to happen didn't happen, I'm one of the ones who was not surprised. It's a little bit different when we listen to politicians.
Yes,
and,
it is.
And mm-hmm. you see, we can put words in their mouths or make guesses as to what they're going to do, which is inappropriate. Well, it's not inappropriate to guess, but it's inappropriate to blame them for a guess we're making. But my problem with Obama is based on things he said. You see, I was not one of those people that worried that Obama was going to break his campaign promises. I worried that he would keep them. And he kept a lot of them. Now, the promise about working together and he's going to bring Republicans and Democrats together, that promise was broken. And I know he says the Republicans won't work with him, but his definition of working together, do things exactly my way. That's his definition of bipartisanship. Okay, so that's not exactly working together. But there were other things that Obama promised about redistributing wealth and those things he wants to do with the environmental agency and positions that he's taken on issues that were the health care that he wanted to bring about. He made it very clear that he was going to do that. So there are times that he's just lied to get his program through, but it's also true that he made some very general campaign promises where I said, I see what this guy's philosophy is. I see what he thinks might be good for this country, and I think this would be terrible for our country. When he said we're going to fundamentally transform America, I said, okay, we're not perfect, but we are the best country in the world, and what the heck does that mean to fundamentally transform us? And then he elaborated, and he talked about things that are socialism. And just because he wasn't using the word socialism doesn't mean it wasn't social. You know, the old saying, if it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. So if we're actually listening to what somebody says they're going to do, if we're actually looking at their voting record and looking at what they did, these are not conspiracies. These are actual facts.
Right. And as I listened the last time in the campaign, I heard, you know, it was going to be change and it was going to be something different. And that's what I wanted. I didn't want any more of the standard politics that we were seeing. I wanted something different.
Okay,
let
me ask you a question, because I heard that from a lot of people. I heard, oh, I'm all excited about the change. And then I would ask them, what kind of change? I talked to a college student one time, and he said, Obama, change. And I said, what change? And he just kind of looked at me and he goes, change for the better. And then he walked off. It was very clear that he got caught up in a hype. Now, I know that you didn't just get caught up in a hype.
You thought
you heard something.
I thought I was hearing it was going to be different. We're going to change how Washington runs, which was great because I thought there should be less politics in Washington and more common sense.
Okay, well, because that always sounds good. Less politics, more common sense. What exactly did that mean to you? What would be an example of less politics in Washington? What would be an example of more common sense in Washington?
Less of the lobbying and just trying to help each other out, and more of what's really good for this country.
Okay.
That's what I mean.
Okay, let's come back to that. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show, Bob Siegel and Dana Wright. Website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own website simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com. You are listening to the Bob Siegel Show with Dana Wright. Dana, I had put the question to you when Obama said we're going to have change and hope. What that meant to you was that Washington would be different.
Yes.
I said, what did you mean by Washington being different? You started on that. Go ahead and continue.
Well, and it, for me, I thought I was hearing him say that he was going to break the tradition of how Washington typically operated, how I felt like he was not necessarily going to be doing the back scratching that
being
everybody
does. Less beholding
correct.
To lobbyists?
That would be a big part of what I thought I heard. Now I know that
the
now.
The lobbyists, but, the unions, that drives almost everything.
I understand that now. At the time, it didn't sound like it. I thought because he wasn't in politics, there wasn't a lot of history in politics. To me, that was a positive because he wouldn't be beholding to a lot of people. I believed him when he said that our economy was going to get better. You know, it's going to just be financially, we'd be better off. We'd be more family oriented. I thought I heard more family oriented, more patriotism. Now, that's what I thought I heard.
How would you react, or how do you think somebody who doesn't like politics would? And I think I know the answer to this. I'm asking it rhetorically. How would you react if somebody like me said, supposing he didn't actually want the economy to get better, supposing he wanted to sink our capitalistic economy, turn it into a socialist economy, blame it on his predecessor, George Bush, and those mean and nasty Republicans, claim he tried, but if all along his intention from the beginning was to do that, would that be something that would sound like an outrageous conspiracy theory?
Yeah, it absolutely sounds.
Okay, now.
It sounded outrageous originally, but now that I have watched over several years.
But it doesn't sound outrageous to you now after having watched him for the
last 3 years. Not what I see now, no. And yet, that still, to me, I still have a hard time believing it, truthfully, because I think the highest office in the land should be the person you can trust, have it at face value. What I didn't understand, what his real agenda was. That's the difference.
And here's the interesting thing. When I ask you, does it sound outrageous? Okay.
It does.
All right. And as the person who said it, let me say to you in the audience, it sounds outrageous to me too. And here's why it sounds outrageous to both of us. It is outrageous, but sometimes something can be outrageous and still be true. What people mean is it's so outrageous, it couldn't happen in America. Now, the reason Americans don't think that kind of thing can happen in America is that kind of thing has not happened in America. We've been living in a free country. We're used to that. It's become like comfortable old leather.
Yeah.
And when somebody says, well, maybe we can make our country better, well, sure, we could make our country better. But if they mean they want to change it and make it like other countries, let me tell you, the people to whom that rings true are people who come from socialist. I've had people call in this radio show. I've had them on as guests, people that come out of socialist and communist countries where they were not free, or Muslim countries where they were not free. And they try to warn us. They say, you guys, we've already been through this. I saw this happening in my country. And it's the same playbook. People like Karl Marx have actually written books like The Communist Manifesto. Okay. And there's a fellow named Saul Alinsky. And I've talked about him in more detail before on this program. But he wrote a book called Rules for Radicals. And it was how to have a revolution that completely overthrows a country. Now, his sympathies were very socialist. But the book Rules for Radicals was kind of generic for any cause. And it puts things in there like it's okay to lie because the means justify the ends. You must demonize your opponent. For example, when Obama gets up, and this is now President Obama, you weren't hearing as much of this from Kennedy, but he says Republicans, and I don't think he means every citizen, but he means the Republican politicians. The Republicans that are in the House of Representatives and the ones that want to run, they want you to have dirty water and they don't want you to have clean air, okay? And they don't want you to have good health care.
How does he get away with saying that in that number one, that isn't really what Republicans want?
And he was going to be the uniter.
He says it right there. For the whole nation to hear.
I'm going to be a uniter.
But people say,
and he was the one that said, last election, we don't have red states, we don't have blue states, we just have the United States, Republicans. Right. Now, okay. Now, you don't hear the Republicans saying that. The Republicans have different ideas on how to get, they want to have clean air and water too. They don't think the government has to run every single little fiber of a business's being to do it. They want to have health care too. They don't think the government getting involved with health care is a good idea because we'll get the same kind of service in the doctor's office that we get in the post office. And it's slow enough in the doctor's office. Sometimes you have different ideas on how to do it. And so we could say, look, sometimes we have two people and they both mean well, but they have different ideas. But when Obama gets up and says the Republicans want you to have dirty water, want you to have dirty air, want you to have bad health care, they want you to have it. Okay. If man really believes that, then he's not an intelligent man. He's a stupid man if he believes that. But here's the thing. I don't think Obama's stupid. I don't agree with a word that comes out of his mouth, but I'll say this about him. He's an extremely intelligent, capable, skilled, talented, educated man. So if the choice is he's lying or he's so stupid he really believes this, well, he doesn't strike me as stupid. That means he knows, Dana. He knows that what he's saying about his Republican opponents is not true, and he's saying it anyway. Now, that's disingenuous at the very least. Some could make a case that that's just downright evil. I wouldn't say that that means everything about the man is evil, but that is at least a singular example of an evil action.
So help me understand, why are his ratings continuing to be, I mean, he and Romney are going pretty much neck and neck here, a little bit of a bump for him. Why is that? Why are there still so many people that think that we're better off when I can't fathom
because
our country's not better off. Okay. So how are people still thinking another 4 years under Obama is a good thing? Help me understand that.
Because he's not speaking the truth, and there are a lot of people that are believing it. I'm pointing out some things that he's saying that are lies. The people that are following him, they don't believe their lies.
Okay.
Now, if I really believed that Obama loved and cared about me, and Mitt Romney couldn't stand me and wanted me to have dirty air and no health care, if that was really true, I'd vote for Obama as well. They're lies. But there's a lot of people that believe them. And then there are people who don't want to know the truth. I've seen some sincerely believe them, but there are a lot of people that there's this politically correct pressure on them. If you criticize Obama about anything, and I mean about anything, and I've seen this, I could write an article for the Washington Times communities and list and document some things Obama's done, and somebody will write a comment saying, oh, well, clearly your problem with him is that he's black. Now, since you were talking about some advice that we could give to people, if you're out there and you want to tell somebody that there are reasons to not vote for Obama, but you know they're going to assume that the only problem you could possibly have with him is he's our first African-American president. There's a way to shut down the conversation, but change the tenor of that conversation immediately. All you have to do is ask them, how do you explain the African-Americans who did not vote for Obama? How do you explain the many Hispanics who did not vote for Obama? Are they racists? And they're going to say no. I say, okay, well then if it wasn't because of his skin color, if it wasn't because of race, then the African Americans who are conservative and didn't vote for Obama, they must have had a different reason, right? And they'll say, yeah. So, well, then if they could have had a different reason, couldn't a white person have had a different reason? Or are you assuming all white people are the same, which makes you the racist? We'll be right back.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Of course, you're listening to the beautiful music from the movie The Magnificent Seven. To those of you who are a lot older than me, but I guess I'm kind of old too because I remember it was the music on the Marlboro commercial. Never made me want to smoke a cigarette, but it did make me fall in love with great music.
And I wanted to ride horses.
That should make you want to ride a horse too. No, you betcha. You betcha. Yeah. Say hello again to Dana Wright.
Yes, I'm still here. One thing I would love for you to cover before we close out today is tell us, what is the future of America going to look like under Obama? What are you foreseeing? Should we elect him again? Help us understand it for those of us that aren't too politically savvy.
Okay. Well, even if he just continued doing the same things he already started, which is government taking over healthcare, redistribution of wealth, taxing people at the gazoo, that itself would be bad. And I need to put to rest some of these myths. I always hear about the rich don't pay their fair share. The top 5% pay close to 50% of the taxes. About 50% of our people don't pay any federal income tax. They do pay Social Security tax and sales taxes and things. I don't mean to say they don't pay taxes at all. But to say that the rich aren't paying their fair share is crazy. But look, even if you don't want to have any empathy for the rich, it's the rich who start jobs. And you need to understand Obama's definition of rich. His definition of people that should be taxed a lot more is anybody who makes more than $250,000 a year. Now, I don't make anything close to $250,000 a year. And if that was what I was actually making, I don't know if I'd be considered wealthy, but I'd sure be doing better off than I am now. But the fine print on that is that includes people who own businesses that are taking in $250,000 a year. Now, your business can take in $250,000, but you got your overhead, you've got your employees that you're paying, and by the time you cut yourself a paycheck, that might be a lot less than $250,000 a year. But if your business is being taxed a lot more, then you can't afford to hire as many people. Then you add in healthcare. Obama comes along and says, well, every single person you hire, you're going to have to offer them a healthcare plan, and you can't offer it to some and not others. You can't say, well, if you work here so many years, you get this package. If you're new, you don't get that package. You have to offer it to everybody, or you have to pay a fee. Well, what are a lot of people going to do? They're just going to hire less. And so, and then, of course, the less people are being taxed, the more money they're making. The more money they're making, the more the government is taking in through revenue for the taxes that are fair. The government actually makes more money when the people are taxed less. Now, Obama knows this because he's not stupid. But if he has this agenda, and this gets back to the movie you were talking about last week, Dana, the movie 2016.
Obama's America.
Obama's, yes. America. Now, Dana and I have both seen that movie. I knew a lot of those things before I saw it because I've studied Obama. I got to tell you, I found some very enlightening things too, even as one who'd already studied it. But if you knew nothing about Obama, that movie would inform you about a lot of things, and it's documented, and you can do a fact check on anything that's said in that movie. And it shows you what his real agenda is, that he believes America has been this bad, evil, colonialist superpower. He doesn't want us to be a superpower. He doesn't want us to be as successful. He wants us to be more a part of the world, more a part of the global village. Now, I think he holds those views sincerely, but he's sincerely mistaken. There are things that he's done that I think have been downright wrong and bad, but I also think that his general philosophy about socialism, I think he holds sincerely, but this is something that just doesn't work. Whenever a country's turned so socialistic that it actually becomes communistic, it turns into a dictatorship. In Europe, I know we see socialized medicine here and there, but what we're seeing a lot in Europe are hybrid countries that are perhaps more socialistic than we are, but they still have some capitalism. When it becomes pure socialism to the point where it's actually communistic and the government's running anything, it really turns into a dictatorship. Now, another thing that Obama, some things he tried to do but didn't succeed in, all kinds of interesting things are going on with the FCC. Obama loves what's called the fairness doctrine. They want to come in and start controlling news and talk radio and saying for every hour of conservative programming, you have to have an hour of liberal programming. Well, that sounds good at first. It sounds fair and balanced. But this is supposed to be a free market. We're not supposed to be having the government tell us what to do. By the way, our tax dollars pay at least significant portions of public radio, PBS, NPR. They have a very liberal slant. And yet even conservative people, they pay for that. And yet more people are listening to free radio than they're listening to the government radio. And so the government already has this. And I said, this is very interesting. They're only expressing the need to do this with talk radio. You don't hear these people saying we need to go on ABC and NBC and CBS. And can you imagine them saying, well, let's do that in a college campus. For every teacher that teaches a pro-choice position, we should have a teacher teaching a pro-life position. For every teacher that gets up in class and talks down about Republicans, we should get a teacher that gets up and talks positively about Republicans. For every teacher that gets up and says to believe in God is a lot of nonsense, we should have a teacher that gets up and teaches about God. We won't live to see the day. But here's the other thing. In radio, this would not work. Because the way the radio market works is people listen to what they want to listen to. For example, let's say they tried the fairness doctrine with music stations. Can you imagine them going to a rock station or a heavy metal station or a rap station and say, okay, you're going to play half of that, but the other half of the time you're going to play classical. You see, that way it'll be fair and balanced. Okay, what's going to happen? The people that don't like classical are just going to turn it off when that comes. That means no advertisers are going to buy that part. And so the real agenda is to put talk radio out of business if it is conservative. So it sounds great, the fairness. It sounds like, well, for every hour of Hannity, you're going to have an hour of Combs. But that's not what's really going to happen. The attempt is to shut it down. They also tried to pass a law that says that Obama should be able to take over the internet during times of emergency. I mean, there's just really scary things they're talking about. And remember, this president, I talked about this last week, he circumvented the other branches of Congress several times now with the immigration issue. He's gone ahead and on two different counts, one the Supreme Court, one a law that was passed by Congress regarding welfare. He's just moved away from them and circumvented them. And this was when he was still trying to get reelected. Can you imagine what he'll do if he doesn't have to worry about a reelection? And now this is just something I want to throw out there. I'm not saying this will happen. I'm saying it wouldn't be beyond me that in 4 years, see, I think this guy really likes being president. And I think in 4 years we'll hear, hey, if Roosevelt was able to have four terms, why can't I have another term? And there'll be a movement to go back and change that. And they won't always necessarily do it through the Constitution. Maybe we'll get some judge to rule on it. Some judge that was appointed by Obama. Who knows? That one, that's just a little opinion of mine. That wouldn't surprise me. I'm not saying that's going to happen. These other things probably are going to happen, though.
Well, let me ask this. That's a picture of what it might be like if Obama comes back in. Let's say Obama is not reelected. There's a lot that's gone on in our country in these last 4 years. We're reaping the results of that. Is it reversible? Would we be okay?
Okay, well, I want to be...
Suppose Romney comes in.
Yeah, I want to be really honest with you. I want to be really honest with you because I don't like it when Obama gives all...
It's hard to undo.
Yeah, I don't like it when he gives all these... It's very hard to undo. Some would argue that our economy is in such bad shape and we become so morally decadent that we're on a road without any turns. I'm going to be as sobering as I can possibly be right now. I'm not saying that changing our president will fix our country. I'm saying we better try it. Dana, you have been wonderful. You are such a good sport to talk to, step out of your comfort zone. And of course, you've hosted other shows with me. I think I owe it to you to bring you back soon and have you host an all biblical religious show for me where we don't even mention politics at all.
That would be far more pleasant for me.
We won't mention Obama or Romney or Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid, just the Apostle Paul and the Apostle Peter and King Nebuchadnezzar, who also tried to conquer the world, and maybe some politics from biblical times.
Yeah, but no more politics.
No politics in the press. They're more fun when we read about them.
That's right. Thank you.
Okay, I will be back with you next week. You are always welcome. Your questions are welcome, too.